Well, a survey of 7,500 Kiwi teens has found their sexual activity has dropped, but so too has the use of condoms and other forms of contraception. The just-released Youth 19 Rangatahi Smart Survey found overall the number of sexually active students who always wore condoms has dropped from 49% 2 decades ago to 41%. The numbers were more stark when broken down by ethnicity. 42% of Māori and 30% of Pacifica reported using contraception consistently, compared to Pākehā at 61%. The study also found students in low decile areas were less likely to have safe sex. So why has condom and contraception use not improved in 2 decades? Students in the survey called for easier access to health services and less judgment when they did. We welcome this morning the study's lead investigator, Dr. Terri-Anne Clark, who's Associate Professor at Auckland School of Nursing. Hi, Terri-Anne.
Morena, Catherine.
Welcome also to the Chief Executive of Family Planning, Jackie Edmund.
Good morning. Morena.
And Ata Maria, and welcome to Christine Camel, who's Project Lead for the School Nurses Association.
Morena, Catherine.
Well, welcome everyone. Terri-Anne, you've been involved in this survey right from the beginning and lead investigator for the past two surveys. What struck you about the findings from 2019 compared to previous years?
Well, one of the kind of most striking differences is that the proportion, the numbers of young people who are having sex has really declined over the last 20 years. So from 50% in 2001 down to 31% in 2019. So quite dramatic differences. We also saw a delay at the age that young people were having sex. So, you know, young people are waiting longer and fewer young people are having sex. But of those who are sexually active, they are less likely to use contraception and condoms.
Can we talk, first of all, about the reduced sexual activity in these age groups? Were you able to learn any more about what is driving that?
So there's a number of things. And if we look at sort of risk factors across the board, we've seen a really large reduction in substance use. For instance, we've seen like a 50% reduction in young people trying cigarette smoking, a really large reduction in binge drinking. We've seen less young people over the last 20 years drive dangerously. And, you know, that's really reflected in much bigger statistics around young people's, you know, deaths from driving and, you know, ending up in hospital for substance use. So, you know, we've seen a general trend in fewer young people having sex. And I think part of that is because young people are sort of exposed to environments. So parents are monitoring their young people a little bit more. Young people are, you know, are often engaging in the world through social media. So they're not going out to parties as much as we used to in the old days. So there's a whole range of things going on there.
It's a really interesting dynamic, isn't it? And you see the lesser activity, sexual activity in this overall group as part of that trend?
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Go ahead.
Yes.
Okay.
I think one of the more interesting things, though, is that we have seen a difference in the way that this works. So, for instance, as you said earlier, Māori and Pacifica are less likely to access sexual health services. And if we look at rainbow young people, so and young people with disabilities, their access is really restricted. So there are differences in the way that young people are accessing sexual and reproductive health services. One of the other really important things is that what we found from our survey was that most young people are still going to their general practice. So 75%, three quarters of young people are accessing sexual and reproductive health care from their general practitioners. But we also found that, you know, around 40% of young people said that they're not being seen, that they're being seen by themselves. We know that young people aren't going to get the sexual and reproductive health care, the mental health services that they need if they aren't being seen for at least part of the time by themselves and being reassured about confidentiality.
So let's look at this in two parts. Where you saw contraception use consistently, just give us an indication of how that was happening. You've just told us in three quarters of cases, people would be going to their GP. What else did you see in common among those who were regularly using contraception?
So we know that Pākehā girls were more likely to access sexual health services. We also know that young people living in urban communities were much more likely to access sexual health services. We also know that those in higher decile schools were more likely to access sexual health services. It's really, really strongly related to poverty. So, you know, we know that if young people don't have financial resources, they're not going to get those services that they need. We also know that in New Zealand, you know, primary care is not free for our young people. So it's another huge barrier to being able to get services that you need.
What of the roles of schools in this with respect to broader sexual health education? Was that another indicator of whether contraceptive use was going to happen? Is there a big variation in what is discussed and possibly available in schools?
Yes. You know, and our survey really shows that there is huge variability between schools. Some schools are doing a great job. They're doing lots of comprehensive sexuality education, and that curriculum has just been refreshed and updated. There's peer support programs, there's Gay Straight Alliance programs, there's peer sexuality support programs, and some schools are really doing a great job in making sure that young people have access to information. Other schools aren't. And, you know, one of the really, really important pieces of work that Christine is doing with Te Tātou, with the National Youth Health Leadership Group and the Ministry of Health, is that they are trying to make sure that there is some consistency in services delivered to young people, because it's not fair. Wherever you are in New Zealand, you should be able to get the same level of care in your school as other young people.
I'll come to Christine in a moment about just that, but staying with the schools, is some of this also attitudinal? Did it depend on who was in charge? And if so, is it principal? Is it boards of trustees? What again would determine whether there was at least education, if not other services available within the school?
Well, first of all, you know, there are some guidelines around what should be provided in schools, but the boards of trustees have huge influence over what is delivered and what is, you know, taught in schools. So, for instance, if a school decided that it didn't want any information about condoms and contraception, perhaps if they were a religious school, they will not teach that content. So we know for, you know, a huge proportion of our young people, they're not getting really good quality care. We also know that as a society, we are really judgmental about sexual behaviour, and in particular, young people's sexual behaviour. And, you know, we really just have to sort of say, actually, this is a fundamental human right. Young people need information about sexual relationships and for their future life. They might not be sexually active now, but it's an important skill to have, and that they need to know how to get those services and have them really convenient. We also know that young people will not access services if they are tricky to negotiate. Young people kind of have to trip over services and that because they're so convenient that, you know, we really need to look and at how we do this better.
Stay with us. Just before I come to Christine about what's happening in schools, I want to introduce Jackie Edmund again, Chief Executive of Family Planning. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Can you just pick up on how the system works now? As Terri-Anne was saying, 75% of those who were using contraception regularly were going to the GP. That's not free, for starters, is it?
No, right? It's quite variable across the country.
And then second, what is the onus, if any, on GPs or your own doctors and family planning when dealing with a young person?
Well, the onus is for us to make our services youth-friendly, to make them as hopefully as cheap as possible, if not free. Certainly at family planning, it's free. But the main criterion covered off a lot of areas around, you know, ensuring that young people can trip over services, not having to make appointments, really flexible services. And clearly, you know, it seems that we're letting young people down, and particularly in those areas, in rural areas, in for Māori and Pacifica.
If a young person comes to a GP or comes to family planning, they have a right to privacy. What's the sort of delicacies of the relationship, particularly with a younger teen? One thing if you're 18 or 19, but with a younger teen, how does it work?
Well, I think it's just it is important to reassure young people that the service is confidential, even though all clinical services are confidential. Young people particularly worry about that. That's a really careful thing that we need to cover. The other area is that they're non-judgmental. Young people will experience, we've just done a contraceptive survey where they may go and see their GP and they're a conscientious objector and they're not somebody who would prescribe contraception. That's a really poor start for and incredibly difficult for young people to negotiate that.
What is happening with family planning's role then when it comes to the delivery of services to teens and younger people? Do they come to a clinic essentially? Do you have a more proactive role with this age group? What's happening?
So we've got clinics across the country, and we offer telephone consultations for contraception. And we offer drop-in clinics in some parts of the country, but we're really struggling currently because the demand for our services far outweighs our resources to deliver. So, and it's really shocking that there is many of our clinics you have to wait for an appointment, which is a terrible option for young people. They really need the service when they want it, and they need it accessible. So we really are struggling, and I think, you know, we are letting young people down.
What is happening with you saying that the services are overwhelmed? What does that mean in practice?
Well, in practice it means that if you can't, you might ring our contact centre to get an appointment, and you may, if you want a contraception, you just want the ECP or a quick appointment, we can offer that generally fairly quickly. But if you would like to have an implant or an IUD, or you want to see someone to have a conversation about what contraception you would like, you could wait for, you know, several weeks, unfortunately. That is a huge barrier for young people. And the main reason for that for us is that we're on the same funding we've had for the last 12 years, and the demand for services has gone up significantly, and particularly for services for implants and IUDs, which are long appointments.
So you're not seeing a reduction necessarily in the number of young people coming to you for help. Is there a pressure on your ability to help?
Yes, there's a real difficulty for us to do that. And I think reading this, I mean, this research is so incredibly helpful, is, you know, really we need to be doing more outreach clinics, more school-based services, but they are very costly to run and really staff-intensive. So it's difficult to make that happen. But, you know, having this research has just given us, push really to really look at how we can do things differently, particularly in those rural areas.
You've done your own surveys and found similar results?
Yeah, very similar results. And there's other barriers, like I said, around conscientious objection, around people feeling judged and having, you know, a really bad experience when they come to services. So, you know, this is an area that we also need to improve.
You mentioned, kids don't necessarily want to physically present anywhere anymore. In fact, fewer and fewer of us are doing that. More and more is happening online. More and more services accessed online. Do you believe the current structure for family planning is a barrier, that at the very least you need to be able to go to where they are or be very close to where they are, which is logically for many of them schools, tertiary institutions, whatever?
Yes, certainly it is a barrier, but the difficulty is that we've got so many people wanting to come and see us. We have offered the telephone consultations, and interestingly, young people seem to have been more interested in doing it on telephone rather than doing it online. And that has definitely made a difference. But we need to be more flexible in how we provide services, but it is difficult to manage that on top of the demand that we've got.
Are you surprised that things have got worse rather than better with contraceptive use?
No, I mean, it's pretty sad, but there's been very little focus on giving, you know, in terms of sexuality and relationships education in the last few years, and there hasn't been a big focus on contraception. So it's sad, but it makes sense that contraception is something that young people, and also in the survey, young people were really interested and wanted more information. We're clearly not meeting the needs that they've got in terms of information about services and contraception.
If contraception use is as low as it is in some groups, what are the consequences of that, and are you seeing it in your clinics?
Yes, well, we certainly see the unplanned pregnancy. Many young people choose to carry on with that pregnancy, and they have great support from their whānau. But we also see young people, you know, having terminations.
And STDs, are they rising?
Yes, no, very yep. Thank you for that. Yes, absolutely. And the other concern, of course, is STIs. And we really are struggling to make any impact on reducing sexually transmissible infections. It's still a major concern. And the lack of condom use, you know, contributes to that hugely.
Jackie, stay with us. Christine Campbell is project lead for the School Nurses Association. Christine, what's your take on what's happening from the front lines?
Well, kia ora, Catherine. Thank you so much for having me on the show this morning. It's really great that this conversation is happening. Look, I just really would emphasise both and endorse TC and Jackie's points there. First, I want to just touch on that that aspect around what are young people's rights in terms of accessing services. So we have a Sterilisation, Contraception and Abortion Act in New Zealand, which ensures young people can access sexual health services confidentially. School-based health services are ideally placed to meet some of these needs of young people that we're talking about. And what we know from young people is that they want three things. They want acceptability, they want accessibility, and they want affordability. So acceptability is something that the young person feels comfortable going to. It needs to be accessible, hence why school-based health services work, because they're right on site. And it needs to be affordable. And again, school-based health services are generally free for young people. And so that's a really effective way of how we can meet some of the needs of these young people.
Where are you seeing it happening well? I wouldn't be surprised, in schools that are making use of nurses' services.
Yes, so this is really interesting. One of the things that, you know, really impacts on the service scope, if you will, is the qualification and the scope of the nurse or doctor working in schools. So you can have an enrolled nurse and a registered nurse in a school. Our team did a survey, some research 2 years ago. December 2018, we had one enrolled nurse working in school-based health services in New Zealand, and 95% of nurses working in schools were registered nurses. And they may or may not use standing orders, which is a prescriptive agreement between a doctor and a nurse that allows the nurse to have a greater scope. And so nurses themselves can't, under the registered nurse qualification, they can't prescribe themselves, but they can certainly give out condoms, and that's sort of the baseline of what we do. If you have a standing order, that then allows you a greater scope to work with that doctor to give, to certainly do screening, dispense medication if it's indicated. There's a lot of legislation around this, which means it's a really safe practice. And then we've got some advancing scopes in the nursing field at the moment with community prescribers, which allows a registered nurse, if they do that comprehensive training, to then be able to give a little bit more scope under their own jurisdiction and training. So they've got about 20 medications that they can give out if it's clinically appropriate. And then you have a nurse practitioner as well, which is you know, really a great emerging role, which allows them to just prescribe anything that a GP would in primary care. And so these kind of complications of who's employed where, they can be employed under health or education, and that really has a lot of impact on what they can do for young people.
So it sounds like it's a real patchwork. And is this feeding straight into the inequities that we're seeing here? Condom use is high at 61% in some groups and 30% in other groups. Does this get right to the heart of the problem?
Yeah, absolutely. So the heart of the problem is that there's no national standards or frameworks in New Zealand for school nurses or school-based health service centres. And this leads to huge inequities in service access by young people. And as TC was saying, you know, one student who might work, live in, attend a decile 6 school, a rural school, they might only have a first aider to access services from, and another student in a decile 7 school in a large city may have 2 nurses, a GP, a full-time physio, and even a podiatrist. I just found in a school that I was in on Friday, and I thought, wow, you know, this is so, it's so unfair for young people that, you know, that there's such variety in what they can access.
Christine, it's not just how fancy the services are, to be blunt. It's also about the availability of education and information and that attitude thing that, that everyone's been discussing. What do you find in some schools, whether or not your nurses have a presence, that is a real barrier? For some, does it come right back to their values or their, you know, whole perspective on what their students should or shouldn't be doing?
Absolutely, yeah, it really does. So schools are required under the Ministry of Education to do something called a community consultation once every 2 years. And that's consulting with the community, with the staff, with the Board of Trustees and with parents around what should be involved in the sexual health curriculum and what should be involved in what can be accessed in terms of sexual health services from the school. And that piece of work is very, very interesting because aside from, you know, somewhat of a tick box exercise, it can be done really well or it can be done really poorly in that they can collate all the information and feedback, but it really is the Board of Trustees that review that, as TC was saying, and so they have a lot of clout in terms of what is available. Certainly in my practice, I've come across principals that are very anti young people knowing anything about sex. You know, there's this old philosophy that the more we talk about sex with young people, this misconception that discussion encourages sexual activity, and that's simply not true. There's no evidence to support that. And in fact, there's evidence in the contrary that actually if we're delivering good sexual education early, then that delays the onset of sexual activity.
Well, as you see from the figures, the actual prevalence of sexual activity is dropping, but for those who are sexually active, we're seeing less and less safe sex. So
yes.
I don't know what you do to tackle the perspective that we're not talking and we're not providing and it won't happen. What would you do if you had the power to at least make the availability of information and services more fairly available?
Oh, that's a dangerous question, Catherine. If I had the ability, I would make sure that we had robust sexual health services and school-based health services in every school in the country. And, you know, Labor promised to put a nurse in every school, in every secondary school in the country. And that's a good first step. However, the reality of that is it's been a really slow implementation so far. And the literature clearly highlights the benefits of a wraparound team that consists of a GP, a registered nurse, and a guidance counsellor. And it's that multifaceted team that makes a difference. And we do something within the nursing profession within school-based health services called a HEDS assessment. And this is a globally best practice renowned psychosocial assessment tool that we use to engage young people when they first start at secondary school. And this allows us to have a conversation with them about the things that are really relevant to them. And one of the aspects of the HEDS assessment is discussing sexuality. So that's not necessarily whether they're sexually active, but perhaps around their orientation, their experience, what their knowledge is. And what that conversation does is it reassures the young person that this service is private, it's confidential, and it's somewhere that's really easy for them to access at a point where they then decide that this is something that interests them and they want to have a conversation more about it. You think about what young people need to know at age 13 versus what they need to know at age 18 about sex, and it's very different. Sex is an ongoing conversation, it's not a one-off. And so what that assessment does when we see every year nine in school throughout the year is it helps us build a real positive relationship with young people. And where the schools where that is happening, which are the ministry-funded schools at the moment, deciles 1 to 5, are really doing a good service for young people and letting them know that the service is there and it's available.
Thank you, Terry. And just back to you finally. Thanks very much, Christine Campbell. Just back to you finally. Look, there will be parents and there will be schools who say this does not fit with our ethos. We want to educate our young people differently. Is there a way to ensure that there are alternative settings for young people who, despite that, are going to engage in sexual activity? And if so, how does that get better known amongst a group of youngsters?
So I think, you know, every young person has the right to have good information about their bodies, sexual and reproductive health care and relationships. It's a fundamental adult skill that we need for the rest of our lives. Where we get that information will really vary, but, you know, schools can provide a really good place for that. But also whānau, families are, you know, where we get a lot of this information, and often families don't feel equipped to have those conversations. They don't know how to do it. They feel uncomfortable doing it. Nobody's taught them how to do it. Their parents didn't have conversations with them about it. But ultimately, whether we believe young people should be having sex or not, some young people are, and they deserve and they have the right to have access to information and services. One of the other really important things that we haven't talked about today is differential access, and we have to acknowledge that our health system has significant racism and discrimination. So there are groups who are less likely to be able to access care, who are judged more when they do try to access health care, and they experience terrible judgment. And that sort of attitude and information, you know, from health professionals really makes someone very reluctant to engage in health services in the future.
Okay.
So, you know, there are real issues around education. We need to make sure young people have education.
Thanks.
But we also need to make sure that it's good quality care.
Thanks all of you for your time. Dr. Terri-Anne Clark is Associate Professor at Auckland School of Nursing, the lead investigator on this latest Rangatahi Smart Survey. And thanks also to Family Planning Chief Executive Jackie Edmund and Christine Campbell, Project Lead for the School Nurses Association.